Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf issued a conditional no today to the budget the legislature sent him on Christmas Eve. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. The budget passed by the Republican-controlled legislature did not include the $350 million increase in basic public school aid that the Democratic governor wanted. During a press conference in Harrisburg today, Wolf took lawmakers to task for not completing their job.
It doesn't add up. Even with the numbers presented to me by the Republicans before they ran out of town just before the Christmas holiday, this budget does not pay for itself.
And so Wolf announced he'll use his line item veto authority on the spending plan, though he stressed that legislators still had work to do.
We still need a budget. We need one that actually adds up this year. We need one that adds up next year. We need one that fully funds our schools. We need one that really covers the cost of our state.
The governor is vetoing the main budget line for public education because it fell well short of his goal to boost funding by $350 million. Wolf is replacing it with what he's calling emergency spending to alleviate some pressure on schools. Joining me now to discuss the implications of today's announcement on public education is WHYY education reporter Kevin McCorian. Kevin, for starters, how much funding will schools receive?
So schools will get 6 months' worth of state aid, which will help them keep their doors open and lessen the need to immediately seek additional loans or further deplete their reserves. But Dave, it's still unclear exactly how that money will be distributed or how much individual districts can expect. Remember, schools haven't received any state funding all year because of this budget impasse. Philadelphia specifically has had to borrow more than $500 million just to stay afloat. And a few weeks ago, Superintendent William Height said schools could be closed if a resolution wasn't reached by January 29th. Here's Height reacting to Wolf's announcement today.
With only half of the state budget, it's not likely we could get through a full year, but we could go a lot longer than January 29th.
So, Kevin, what's likely to happen next in Harrisburg?
So even with a partial budget passed, there is still a lot of pressure on lawmakers to reach a final deal. In addition to the incomplete school funding, Wolf vetoed parts of the budget with a specific eye on seeking leverage. So, for example, he shredded funding support for the agricultural industry, which mostly affects rural Republican districts.
We're still left to wonder, though, how can agreement be reached on a plan that will appease all sides in Pennsylvania's divided government?
Well, there are two key pieces here that seem like they aren't going anywhere. One is Wolf's insistence on the $350 million boost to public education. That's the main pot of, you know, public education money in the state. The other is the Senate Republicans' insistence on a pension reform bill that would reduce guaranteed benefits to future employees, sparing taxpayers and local school boards from some of the risk in the stock market. Jake Corman is Senate Majority Leader.
This won't get done without pension reform. We continue, you know, I know people are probably tired of hearing that, but that's a key component to getting this finalized.
Now, if we're no longer looking at education spending in isolation, what do negotiations on pension reform look like?
So the Senate passed a bipartisan pension bill that Wolf was ready to sign, but the House couldn't get it done. Every single Democrat voted against it, as did many Republicans, causing both sides to blame the other for the failure. Now, the Wolf administration says the bill could have and should have been passed only with Republican support. They have the votes to pass it by themselves. But moderate Republicans say to Democrats, hey, we were ready to carry your water by voting for the increased spending, and in return, you needed to find some votes to push that pension bill over the goal line. Kate Harper is a Republican from Montgomery County.
I've been there long enough to remember how painful it is to have to stick with your governor, because I was there during the Corbett years, okay? The governor had agreed to pension reform, and the Democrats, to a man or woman, they all voted no, which was a shocker.
Dave, the other big point of disagreement is still how to actually pay for the increased education spending that Wolf wants. Sources say there was a consensus in the Senate for making more items eligible for sales tax, raising money that way, while House Democrats rejected that plan and instead were seeking something that would boost the personal income tax. Without giving specifics, the Wolf administration says it does have the votes to pay for the education increase and blames House Republicans for holding up the process. House Republican spokesman Steve Miskin disagrees and says the votes simply aren't there.
It's easy to vote for spending. It's always easy to vote for more spending. The more difficult thing is, how are you going to pay for that more spending?
and when? Can we expect Wolf's action today to send lawmakers rushing back to the Capitol?
Not likely, Dave. Speaker of the House Mike Terzai sent an email to members this afternoon saying they'll remain out of session until next week.
And with that, the budget stalemate likely extends into a seventh month. Kevin, thanks for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
Thank you, Dave.
WHYY education reporter Kevin McCory. The axe is swinging today at DuPont's Wilmington offices as Delaware employees learn 1,700 jobs would be cut. Details from WHYY's Mark Eichmann.
DuPont CEO Ed Breen made the announcement in a memo to workers. The cuts amount to 28% of the company's Delaware workforce. The layoffs come as part of DuPont's $700 million belt-tightening effort ahead of its planned merger with Dow Chemical, which was announced earlier this month. Delaware Congressman John Carney called it terrible news and a punch to the gut at the end of the year. Governor Jack Markell said it was deeply disappointing. The layoffs are expected to be final by the end of March. There was a bright side to the announcement. Breen also said DuPont would keep its specialty products business based in Delaware. From the Delaware Desk, I'm Mark Eichmann, WHYY News.
Turning to this evening's headlines, it looks like Cooper University Hospital will be taking over paramedic services in Camden in the new year. Just last week, a state judge ruled the law paving the way for Cooper to take control was unconstitutional special legislation. Now an appellate court has issued a stay until the constitutionality of the law gets settled. Virtua Health has been challenging the law, saying it was unfairly written precisely so Cooper could win Camden's paramedic contract. The legislation, championed by the chairman of Cooper's board, South Jersey power broker George Norcross, was signed by Governor Christie in July. Attorneys for three Pennsylvania men charged with possessing child pornography say the suspension of Attorney General Kathleen Kane's law license invalidates her office's prosecution of them. The state Supreme Court has suspended Kane's law license while she defends herself against charges that she illegally orchestrated the release of grand jury information to embarrass political foes. In just a few days, motorists will have to dig a bit deeper to pay for travel on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Tolls will go up 6% next year, largely to repay loans taken out to help fund roadwork projects under legislation passed in 2007, and 2013. The commission expects to impose annual fare increases until the year 2044. The higher rates go into effect Sunday. Some South Jersey beaches will be getting a $15 million touch-up, courtesy of the federal government. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers says it will conduct supplemental sand pumping next month in Ocean City, Sea Isle City, and the Strathmere section of Upper Township. The work will repair damage from a storm that took place just after the beaches had undergone a replenishment project in the fall. The sand will be dredged from an inlet where sand shoaling has made navigation difficult. Overcast, 48 degrees at 6:14. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. The evening forecast, turning partly cloudy, low overnight 46 degrees. Partly sunny tomorrow morning, then clouding up with rain likely later in the day, Wednesday's high 56. Thursday, intervals of sun and clouds, high 53 degrees. For New Year's Day, plenty of sunshine, cooler, high around 42. In fact, sunny days, Saturday and Sunday, high both days in the low 40s. You're listening to WHYY-FM. Still ahead, the Philadelphia Water Department reaches an important milestone in stormwater management months ahead of schedule. Cause for celebration? Instead, they're picking up the pace.
In the next 5 years, we have to double the rate that we have to produce these things.
A watery tale for a soggy day as Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Sometimes when you're a big food conglomerate, it's actually harder to do business.
You know, how do you compete with companies that don't go through all, you know, the hierarchy?
I'm Adrienne Hill, inside the new world of selling cereal, next time on Marketplace from APM.
Marketplace follows Newsworks Tonight starting at 6:30 this evening.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. Ring out the old and ring in the new. Yannick Nezet-Séguin leads the Philadelphia Orchestra on New Year's Eve. Operatic favorites and more. The concert starts at 7:30. You'll be home before the stroke of midnight. Tickets at 215-893-1999 or at philorc.org. This Thursday, December 31st, New Year's Eve at the Kimmel Center with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. New Jersey is among 18 states awarded funds from the U.S. Department of Education's Preschool Development Grants Program. But there's little consensus on how or even whether to grow the Garden State's existing pre-K efforts. Let's learn more with Mayor Rindy. He's written a series of articles on the topic for NJ Spotlight. Mayor, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Glad to be here.
Now, I think the common sense consensus is it can only help to start education for 3 and 4 years old students, though do studies unanimously back that hunch up?
Most of the studies seem to support that. There's some debate over which programs are best, how to improve them, and seems to be a wide consensus that for poor children especially, preschool provides a real big benefit getting them ready for school and improving their lives in the long term.
Discuss what we know about the Head Start program, which began back in the mid-60s.
Certainly. Head Start is for really the poorest children, mostly those below the poverty line. And most studies show that there is a real benefit to these poor children, that they do better for many years into their lives. Some studies even say into their 20s. However, there was a big federal study that was concluded a few years ago that found that by third grade, the benefits of Head Start compared to other preschool programs or even to not going to preschool had sort of faded away.
Bringing it back to the Garden State, review again the so-called Abbott districts and the efforts there for pre-K funding.
16 years ago, the state Supreme Court ordered that 31 poor districts, the Abbott districts, needed to create preschool programs for their 3 and 4 year olds. So since then, all 3 and 4 year olds in those 31 towns, plus 4 others that later joined, get free preschool, whether they're poor or not. And that program has been shown to be quite successful. The children who go through it do better in school, are held back a grade less often, are in special education less often, as late as 4th or 5th grade.
So now let's talk about the various pressures to grow or reduce the size of pre-K efforts, first from the private sector.
So in the 2008 School Funding Reform Act, the legislature said that the Abbott preschool program should expand to something like 90 or 100 more districts. Now, that was never funded. However, in the last year, a philanthropist named Brian Marr has started an organization called Pre-K Our Way, which is really pushing to finally do this expansion.
Now, to be clear, is he funding this entirely out of his own pocket?
The Pre-K Our Way project, which is a nonprofit organization, is mostly funded by him. It has a budget of something like $3 million. But he has gotten some contributions from other business people, and he also has support from former governors Tom Kaine and Jim Florio and a lot of other people.
And so with that, where does Trenton break on this, specifically Senate President Steve Sweeney?
Steve Sweeney has made expanding pre-K a big part of his agenda. He's proposed a mini expansion to 17 additional districts. It would be a first step, and Pre-K Our Way applauded that.
First step between the robust advocates and Governor Christie.
Yes. Well, Governor Christie, he's made it pretty clear ever since he first ran for governor that he was opposed to an expansion. He said this is a crazy idea, the state can't afford it, and so on. And as far as I know, his opinion hasn't changed since then.
So no big motion, but there is a sense of a limited expansion at hand.
The federal government gave grants to several states last year, including New Jersey, which allowed towns in New Jersey that had some state-subsidized or state-assisted preschool to improve them. So, for example, half-day programs became full-day. They can enroll more children. They can improve certain aspects of the quality of the programs. So that's in 17 districts. And in fact, when Senator Sweeney talks about this Abbott expansion of the preschools, it may be those same 17 districts that end up becoming full-blown Abbotts. So right now, there's sort of a mini expansion. It's only for poor children, only for four-year-olds, but it sort of sets the stage for something more that could be happening in the near future.
Mayor Rendy, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Mayor Rendy has written a series of articles on pre-K in New Jersey for NJ Spotlight. You can hear more of our conversation at newsworks.org. When Philadelphia gets too much rain for its storm sewers to handle, millions of tons of sewage drain into local rivers. And with climate change projected to make for a wetter Philadelphia, the Water Department is hard at work. But rather than building larger and larger storm sewers and treatment plans, it's been investing in green infrastructure so that more rain gets diverted or absorbed into the soil. WHYY's Kyrie Greenberg reports that the Water Department met an ambitious goal months ahead of schedule.
Chris Crockett's team at the Philadelphia Water Department has already greened 750 acres of public property, far ahead of their June deadline. But the deputy commissioner isn't taking it easy.
From 2011 to now, we've really been trying to take it from trying a couple projects here and there to actually building hundreds of projects and then trying to figure out how to operate, maintain, and monitor them. In the next 5 years, we have to double the rate that we have to produce these things.
John Capacasa, Director of Water Protection at the Environmental Protection Agency, is encouraged by how this approach is showing short-term improvements.
I think the thing that distinguishes Philadelphia from a lot of cities around the nation is the scale of their commitment to green infrastructure in tandem with traditional controls. We're going to continue to monitor them to make sure that they're accountable for results in the long term, not just in terms of green acres.
The results thereafter are cleaner rivers, managing stormwater, and improved quality of life. They call it the triple bottom line because these projects are cost-effective, spur economic development, and improve neighborhoods. A seven-acre stretch of formerly abandoned lots in Kensington, now called the Big Green Block, illustrates this concept. The Philadelphia School District, Streets Department, Parks and Rec, and the Horticultural Society all invested here over the past 10 years. The Water Department provided rain gardens, street trees, and underground water retention systems. And the new Kensington Community Development Corporation kicked in some money, too. The community group's Shanta Schachter says that while everyone loves a new playground, it took a while for residents to adjust to the rain gardens.
There were some kids in the neighborhood who used this as their dirt bike jumping ground. There were people who were afraid that all of the grasses and greening was going to bring bugs.
The solution? A sign, full-grown shrubs, and a small fence. The Water Department's Crockett says those landscaping mistakes are an easy fix.
The good news is they're only plants. It's not like we're tearing out pipes and putting a lot of concrete in.
He says pride in improving a neighborhood is vital to the program's future success. But so is finding ways to encourage the private sector to help. The program employs local firms that design and maintain the Green Stormwater Infrastructure, or GSI. It has partnered with AmeriCorps to train young people, many of them ex-offenders, for GSI jobs. And business is booming. A new report from the Sustainable Business Network says Philly's GSI market grew 13% in a year. The network's executive director, Jamie Gauthier, says this includes everyone, from engineers to landscapers.
We are seeing rapid growth, and we are seeing growth that we feel is different and better than in other industries.
Crockett says the Water Department wrote regulations to encourage this sector.
So we've created a market. We create regulations that say if you're a developer, you have to manage the first 1.5 inches of runoff from any paved hard surface. And on the other end, we create a billing process where you get charged for that pavement. And those create the bookends for private industry to come up with all kinds of ingenious ways to do that.
Back at the Big Green Block in Kensington, $25 million in private dollars have been invested within a two-block radius. The various partners involved credit their projects. It's not just because the neighborhood is on the upswing. Schachter of the New Kensington Development Corporation is now working to maintain affordability in a neighborhood that used to worry most about blight.
You make something look a little nice, you make it a little safer. And then the private market and the development community kind of doubled down on that effort to provide additional eyes on the street.
I'm Kyrie Greenberg for WHYY News.
Finally this evening, Camden bid farewell to one of the most beloved members of its police department today. Officer Zero joined the force in 2007 as its first canine officer in years. The Czechoslovakian Shepherd would go on to apprehend more suspects than any other police dog in New Jersey history. But according to his partner, Lieutenant Joachim James, Zero also won over the hearts of residents.
Unlike any other officer in uniform, he actually drew people to him. We would go down the street and people and children would scream his name. They didn't know my name, but they knew his name. I'm sure to this day there's probably children who still don't know who I am, but they know me as Officer Zero, Officer Zero's dad, Officer Zero's partner. And he allowed us to cross that divide in an effortless way and a meaningful way.
Each time Zero made an apprehension, he was rewarded with his favorite food, a 20-piece chicken McNugget meal from McDonald's. Officer Zero was 12 years old. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. It's legal in most Pennsylvania municipalities for a landlord to discriminate based on sexual identity. And on tomorrow's show, we'll look at advocates' efforts in several cities to change that. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
PRI's The World brings you more than just today's news.
Yeah, I had an interview once, and the guy said, so what was it like taking the cameras to your village and the elders seeing these cameras for the first time? You know, these soul-capturing contraptions, you know, how did they feel about that? You know, we've had TV there for like 60 years.
I'm Marco Werman. Join us and hear The World.
Tonight at 8 on WHYY.
Friends School Haverford is proud to support WHYY and announces their winter open house on January 13th from 9 to 11 a.m. Friends School Haverford is a nursery through grade 8 co-ed Quaker school on Philly's main line. Friends School Haverford offers an academically rigorous and progressive program for bright students, where the curriculum is truly rocket science and art, calculus, physics, Shakespeare, and more. Open house or tour details online at friendshaverford.org. Friends School Haverford. Hands-on, minds-on.